Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken in his regular Friday reader seat, and we are reading from the Friday, November 26th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Now we read from our first piece from above the fold. Local jobless rate low, could dip further. Unemployment in all area counties remained below state and national averages in October, and officials believe local jobless rates could tumble even further before year's end. Dubuque County had an unemployment rate of 3.2% last month, according to state data released this week. That is below the 3.7% rate reported in October 2020, and it is lower than the October 2021 state average of 3.9% and national average of 4.6%. The jobless rate in Dubuque County did, however, come in slightly higher than it was in September, when unemployment was at 2.9%. Rick Dickinson, president and CEO of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, said that change is largely due to standard seasonal shifts in unemployment. I think that accurately reflects what we typically see this time of year, he said. Sometimes you see a slight uptick in October, right before you get to the strong retail season. Dickinson emphasized that other metrics better illustrate the continued hiring struggles facing local businesses. He noted that the number of employed Dubuque County residents remains about 2,000 below where it stood in October 2019, the last October before the pandemic began to drastically alter labor dynamics. The vast majority of those people have left the workforce altogether and are not reflected in unemployment metrics, which only measure those obtaining state unemployment benefits. Dickinson believes that drawing individuals back into the labor force remains the key to filling an abundance of open positions in the local job market. But the lingering presence and impacts of COVID-19 continue to influence labor issues, he said. Only once we knock down the pandemic will we get to the point where those who dropped out of the workforce are likely to return, he said. John Deere union workers who commenced their strike in October were not counted among the unemployed in the state's report. Local counties outside of Iowa also displayed jobless rates below state and national averages. In Joe Davies County, Illinois, the unemployment rate was 3.2% in October, well below the 4.7% jobless rate seen in the same month of 2020. Grant County, Wisconsin, saw its unemployment rate fall all the way to 2% in October, slightly below its 2.1% rate from the prior month. The jobless rate was substantially below the 3.2% rate from the same month in 2020. Ron Brisbois, executive director of Grant County Economic Development Corporation, said the unemployment rate could dip below 2% before the year comes to an end. The numbers from last month are in line with what I expected, Brisbois said. I think we could see the unemployment rate fall even further in November, maybe to 1.9% or 1.8%. The continued decline of unemployment likely will be driven by seasonal hires. Brisbois said retail stores and call centers, which provide customer service for large catalog businesses, will aggressively hire during the holiday season. Trends could begin to reverse in early 2022 when construction workers still aren't working and temporary holiday workers are no longer needed. Despite the seasonal fluctuations, Brisbois is convinced that the labor shortage witnessed in the region is here to stay. Right now, we are witnessing what is maybe the tightest labor market historically that we have ever seen in the area, Brisbois said. We are going to be seeing help wanted signs for a long time. Brisbois emphasized that Grant County is focused on long-term solutions to the workforce shortage, most notably trying to support additional housing in the region. Without additional housing options, he explained, the county will not be able to attract new residents who can fill the large number of vacant positions. Conveying the opportunities in today's labor market might be another way to coax additional people into the workforce. Dickinson emphasized that workers wield great influence today, given the unique labor dynamics present in today's economy. Right now, there are excellent positions available in all segments of the economy, he said. Companies in every industry are desperate to hire. Workers have never had greater opportunities. Last week, the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits dropped to 199,000, the lowest since November 1969. Since topping 900,000 in early January, the applications have declined steadily and now have fallen below their pre-pandemic level of around 220,000 per week. And our next piece. Area experts offer tips to boost online safety for children. When Andy Hofer asked his students at George Washington Middle School about important aspects of online safety, they usually know the answers. They know to keep their social media accounts private, to not share their location, and to not accept friend requests from people they don't know. The problem, though, seems to come when it's time for them to act on what they know, said Hofer, who teaches digital literacy as part of Washington's exploratory class. Once they get out of the classroom and into their personal life, I don't know if it's the need for acceptance or what it is. It kind of blinds their judgment, he said. Hofer noted that while students learn in school about online safety, those lessons ultimately have to start and be reinforced at home. Indeed, he and other professionals whose work includes internet safety for youth said there are steps families can take to help youth make smart decisions online. Here are some tips area educators and other officials offered to help families keep their children safe online. Be aware of your child's online presence. Hofer encouraged parents not to be afraid to log on to their children's social media accounts to see what they have been posting and who their friends are. He acknowledged that parents want to trust their children, but noted that teens face different pressures than their parents did as they grew up. Dubuque Police Lieutenant Ted McClellan also encouraged parents to check out the sites teens use for social media to review or to have access to their accounts. The teenager may be hesitant to it, but it may minimize the amount of problems a teenager may have knowing that a parent has access to see what they're posting, to see what they're using in the messaging functions, and that sort of thing, he said. Remind children not to share their location online. Hofer said educators often remind students not to share their location on social media and to not post when they are on vacation or their parents are out of the house. Use parental approval features. Dana Miller, commander of the Wisconsin Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, suggested families set up parental approval features on children's phones to be notified when their child is interested in an app or game. That allows parents to learn about it, discuss it with their children, and set limits. Make conversations normal and frequent. While schools teach children about digital literacy, messages about online safety have to start at home, Hafer said. He notes that students remember what they learn while their teachers are talking about it, but it can be easy to forget when they move on to a different subject. I just think it should be a normal conversation like you have with your kid about how was school or anything like that, Hafer said. Help children set limits. As parents discuss internet usage with their children, they also can work together to set limits on online activity and to come up with consequences if children break one of those rules. Some of her favorite rules are not using phones in the bathroom and not using phones in the bedroom unless the doors are open, according to Miller. That can reduce pressure on youth if they end up in a situation where someone sends an explicit request. What's best for a family looks different for each family, and generally, we can give ideas, but the best thing that you can do is figure out what rules work for you and stick with those, Miller said. McClellan recommended that families keep devices in common areas of homes so parents can see what their children or teens are doing online. Talk to them about how to respond. Miller also recommended giving youth action items they can follow if something does happen online, such as how to report if someone says something inappropriate to them, or how to respond if someone makes an inappropriate request. Show you care. Jim Roberts, Director of Instructional Technology and Student Reporting for Western Dubuque Community School District, said he has found over the years that scare tactics aren't effective at helping youth develop online safety skills. Rather, he emphasized the importance of candid, mature conversations in which parents communicate that they care about their children's safety. It's teaching the skills, patiently teaching the skills, that's going to get the students further than trying to scare them, giving these worst-case scenarios, Roberts said. It's never too early to start. Hafer noted that children are starting to use social media at younger and younger ages, including in elementary school, so it is important to start talking to children early about online safety. Maybe if we can start on them when they're first going into school, and we work together at this, I think it can be something that the kids are educated about, he said. Our final front page piece begins with two pictures of the annual event that has been part of Dubuque for decades. The Ginter Tradition delivers again. And the first large picture in the center, we have a young lady in a red baseball cap putting food on the plate of a man in a plaid jacket and looks like a hat representing military service. And it reads, Jody Lukens of Dubuque serves food during the Ginter Family Annual Thanksgiving Community Dinner at Joliet Event Center in Dubuque on Thursday. And our other smaller inset picture, young man picking up another tray of food. Andrew Henry of Dubuque grabs more food during the dinner Thursday, and there are roasters just lined up, each of them, of course, filled with a turkey. And our article reads, Emily and Samuel Craig recently moved to Dubuque with their two children. Emily's mother opted not to host a Thanksgiving meal this year, and Samuel's parents live out of state. The Craigs' new residence is small, and they weren't sure they'd be able to prepare a traditional Thanksgiving feast. We couldn't afford to get a ham or a turkey at the last minute, said Emily. So the couple brought their sons, Jack 2 and John 1, to the Joliet Event Center in downtown Dubuque on Thursday to partake in the Dubuque Community Thanksgiving Dinner. If we didn't come here today, we wouldn't be having a Thanksgiving meal, Emily said. We would be alone, added Samuel. The annual Thanksgiving meal was launched in 1962 by former restaurant owner and longtime Dubuque resident Donna Ginter. The guest list for that first meal was small, a handful of men with nowhere to go on the holiday. But nearly six decades later, the dinner is now a community staple, serving thousands each November. Donna Ginter died in 2013, but her children continue their mother's tradition, aided by a host of relatives and community volunteers. It's still a need in Dubuque, so we just continue it because that need is still there, said Jenny Ginter, one of Donna Ginter's daughters. The feast was canceled last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In its place, several local businesses and nonprofit organizations teamed up to provide 1,000 delivered and carry-out meals. This year, the Ginters were proud to be back serving the community again, with masks required to ensure the safety of volunteers and guests. We're really happy. Dubuque has such a big heart, said Jenny. People came out of the woodwork to help with this. About 300 volunteers donated their time to the event, many serving as drivers for the 1,300 delivery orders. Others staffed a well-organized assembly line, filling boxes and plates. 85 turkeys were prepared, filling 37 roasters. Volunteers also dished up dressing, potatoes, corn, beans, and a variety of cold dishes, including macaroni salad, cranberries, and strawberry fluff. Jody Lukens of Dubuque scooped dressing at the head of the line. Lukens has volunteered at the event for about 7 years, and she felt its absence keenly last November when the dinner was canceled. It's been part of my holiday now for a long time. Last year with COVID, they didn't have it, and it just didn't seem like a holiday, she said. It brings the community together as volunteers, and it's just a good feeling to be helping. At the other end of the line, first-time volunteer Deb Nelson worked with Jan Ginter, Donna Ginter's niece, to slice and plate apple pies. Nelson was born in Dubuque and recently moved back after 20 years away. She met Jenny Ginter and was inspired to lend a hand with the family's Thanksgiving effort. Jenny is constantly doing something for others, Nelson said. I just wanted to be a part of it. As a member of the Ginter family, Jan has helped at the event forever, doing whatever needs to be done. It really is nice for the community to feed people, she said. Longtime volunteer Kevin Botsford organized the event's 61 delivery routes, most of which fell within Dubuque city limits. As registrations poured in this fall, he took note of each individual's name, address, and number of meals requested, then assigned each to a route based on geographic location. Beth Triplett and Kurt Kiesling of Asbury delivered meals in downtown Dubuque on Thursday morning. The two have volunteered with the Ginter Meal for 7 years and described it as a positive way to give back to the community. You light up somebody's day when you bring some food back to them, Kiesling said. After the delivery orders were completed, the row of volunteers shifted to fill the plates of those who had come in person to receive food. Jenny said about 250 people usually come to eat in person, but the organizers were unsure what attendance would look like amid the ongoing pandemic. Many attendees took their meals to go, but some choose to sit and enjoy their feast at the tables set up in the hall. Brandon Miner of Dubuque has attended the event for 4 years. I'm by myself, so this is some place to go to get some good food, he said. Dubuque resident Pat McDonald also lives alone, and he said it can be challenging to cook Thanksgiving dinner for one person. This is great, he said, while tucking into a plate full of turkey, potatoes, and corn. There's nothing better. We're really happy. Dubuque has such a big heart. Again, from Jenny Ginter. Now we turn to our Dubuque page. In the top of the fold, Bellevue family, high school student, team up to fight cancer. This weekend, Kaiden Decker will mark 1 year since he was last discharged from the hospital after being treated for cancer. It's a milestone the two-year-old's family is observing with gratitude. It is absolutely wonderful to be able to be home with our family all together, said his mom, Nikki Decker, who lives with her family in Bellevue. And inserted in our article right around this is a picture of the family. The Decker family gathers for a photo in Bellevue on Wednesday. We have Kelson, Kendrick, John, Nikki, Kadria, Kaiden, and Cameron, all spelled with K's. And then there's another little inset picture right with that one, with a young man smiling at us, holding a young little boy. And it's Kaiden Decker and Cole Heim posed together in Bellevue. And we'll continue our article. Now, Kaiden's family is teaming up with Bellevue High School senior Cole Heim to support other people dealing with a cancer diagnosis. Heim is readying to launch a campaign to raise funds for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. The whole goal is to find a cure for cancer, but we just want to impact someone's life, Heim said. We just want to help as many people as we can. Kaiden was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia in June 2020 and spent the next 5 months in and out of University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital in Iowa City for 5 rounds of chemotherapy. Despite the challenges that came with cancer treatment, Kaiden responded well to chemotherapy and qualified for a 5th round, increasing his chances of staying in remission to 70%. Luckily, after the 1st round, he was able to get technically in remission, and then they continued with the intensive chemotherapy to make sure that nothing came back, Kaiden's father, John Decker, said. It was after Kaiden's treatment that Nikki and John connected with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Kaiden became an honored hero for the nonprofit's Students of the Year campaign, in which high school students enter a friendly competition to see who can raise the most money for the organization. Nikki later joined the board overseeing Students of the Year in Iowa and was tasked with recruiting local students to join the 2022 campaign. Her mind immediately turned to Heim, whose family was friends with hers and who Nikki knew was interested in helping in his community. I thought this might be a good opportunity for him to be able to just help other people and make a difference even more so than he already was, Nikki said. Heim thought the cause was a good one and came on board. He said that both knowing what Kaiden went through and learning about other people in his community who have battled cancer have helped inspire him to make an impact. Heim officially will be raising funds from January 20th to March 10th. In the meantime, he has assembled a fundraising team to come up with a plan of action for his campaign and to start seeking sponsors to help him raise money. Plans in the works so far include a fundraiser at a basketball game between Bellevue High School and Marquette Catholic Schools, a concert, and a benefit walk. It's been really busy so far, but it's been going very well, Heim said. I have great support from my team. Now we'll go over to our opinion page. We have the Friday Hour View, which is the editorial, small little editorial pieces that are presented by the Telegraph Herald editorial board. And today we have two smileys, but one frowny. But let's start out with our first smiley. Piasta Council right to hold special vote. When it comes to local governance, citizens should have a voice in their representation. That's why it was good to see the Piasta City Council agree to hold a special election early next year to fill the position of mayor. Former Mayor Jim Mertens' resignation came abruptly, just days before the November 2nd election. As the only candidate on the ballot, he was elected again, and then resigned again. That leaves a void to fill for the entire term. Council member Karen Lyons, whose time on the council is nearing an end after she did not seek re-election, cast the lone vote against setting the special election, noting it's easier to appoint. Easier, yes, but that's not a fair representation of the citizens' wishes. Piasta is a rapidly growing city with changes in the community landscape happening constantly. Citizens deserve an opportunity to vote on who will be best served as leader in such a pivotal time for the city. Piasta residents have about a month to decide if they want to run and almost another month to discern who to vote for, should more than one candidate file. The filing deadline for any resident who wishes to run for mayor will be December 29th. Residents can vote early in person at the Dubuque County Auditor's Office from January 5th to 24th. Polls then will open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. January 25th in Piasta. It's good the Piasta City Council put the decision of who should be the next mayor where it belongs, in the hands of the voters. Our second piece also is a smiley. Talk to someone younger than 40 about changes in the LGBTQ plus community, and they likely will be entirely nonplussed. They are of a generation far more accepting of gender identity and sexual orientation differences than their parents' and grandparents' generations. And that acceptance, thankfully, is growing, according to nationwide surveys. A Gallup poll from earlier this year showed 1 in 6, or 15.9%, of adult Generation Z individuals, noted as people ages 18 to 23, identify as LGBTQ+. The survey shows 9.1% of millennials, noted in the survey as ages 24 to 39, identify as LGBTQ+. While those growing numbers contribute to increased awareness and tolerance, so too does changing our institutions to broaden protections, services, and leadership supportive of the LGBTQ+ community. The city of Dubuque has been a leader in this area. Dubuque was first recognized for its LGBTQ+ inclusion efforts in 2016 by the Human Rights Campaign, with a score of 82 out of 100 on the Municipal Equality Index. The score increased to 84 in 2017 and has been at a full 100 points for the past 4 years, with the most recent announcement coming just last week. Human Rights Campaign released its 2021 Municipal Equality Index, a ranking of more than 500 U.S. cities, including 9 in Iowa. The nationwide assessment ranks communities based on the inclusiveness of laws, policies, and services for LGBTQ residents and city workers. Just two other cities in the state that were ranked, Iowa City and West Des Moines, earned the same perfect score. It would be interesting to see how businesses and other institutions would fare with a similar assessment. City of Dubuque's leadership in this area makes our community more welcoming, and it's a rating in which we can all take pride. And our last one, it's a frowny face. As citizens, we would like to think that scammers wouldn't prey on lonely people who might let their defenses down simply because they are eager for someone to talk to amid the pandemic. But we would be wrong. That's exactly the kind of trend that law enforcement has seen in the last year and a half. And this holiday season is ramping up to be prime pickings for fraudsters. They've come a long way since the days of a Nigerian prince emailing you for money. Today's grifts seem a lot more plausible. After all, there's a decent likelihood that a would-be victim is waiting for an update on shipping regarding a package to be delivered. We know plenty of employers are looking for workers, so a seasonal job offer might not sound like a setup. And lots of people are seeking those hard-to-find items this holiday season. The age-old adage remains the same. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And you can probably take out the probably. There are precautions that can help reduce the likelihood of scam, experts suggest. If you get a great email offer from a retailer, go to the company's website directly. Don't click on the links in that email. Be sure you're on a trusted website before making an online purchase. An unexpected call from a business or government could be fraud, especially if they ask you for your banking information. Additionally, no one, really no one, needs to be paid in gift cards for anything. Let's repeat that one. No one. Really, 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 no one, nobody, nada, none, needs to be paid in gift cards for anything. Now, that was my insert. I'm sorry. This is a good time, back to the article, this is a good time of year to reach out to elderly friends, neighbors, and relatives and spread the word about potential scams. Offer yourself as a sounding board in the case of uncertainty. And visiting with those folks might be just the lift they need this holiday season. Yeah, check it out. And while you're checking it out, you know, have a little conversation with somebody. That'd be nice, right? Again, these editorials reflect the consensus of the Telegraph Herald editorial board, and my insert was just emphasizing that fact. You are listening to Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, and we're reading from the Friday, November 26th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Thomas J. Lamb, Zwingle. Thomas Joseph Tommy Lamb, 84, of Zwingle, passed away peacefully November 21st. A massive Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, November 29th, at Cathedral of St. Raphael, 231 Bluff Street, Dubuque, with Father Martin Coolidge officiating. Burial will follow in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Visitation will be from 12:30 to 4 p.m., Sunday, November 28th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Tom was born to Chris and Anita Connolly Lamb on July 18, 1937. He grew up on the family farm in Zwingle and graduated from Makokata High School in 1956. After high school, he served in the United States Air Force. He then returned to the family farm before he started his lifelong job of trucking with cement trucks and later long-haul trucking until retirement at 81. He married Madonna Moots February 3rd, 1968 at Holy Ghost Church in Dubuque, Iowa. Together, they had five daughters. Tom had a daredevil side and a great passion for anything that was mechanical, especially if it would go fast. He raced stock cars and motorcycles in his younger years and enjoyed working with his IH tractors and lawnmowers. He excelled in everything he did and was the second person to ever make it over the Dickeyville Hill Climb. He was a member of the Hawkeye Motorcycle Club. Tom was also a great family man who loved spending time with his family. He enjoyed taking trips to see family in Minnesota and Georgia. He was so proud of his daughters and their successes in life. Tom was the life of the party. He loved to dance, sing, play the piano, and make his grandchildren laugh. He knew everybody, and everybody knew him. To know him is to love him. In lieu of flowers, a Thomas Lamb Memorial Fund will be established. Kenneth J. Ehlinger. Kenneth J. Ehlinger, 97, of Maquoketa, passed away Tuesday, November 23rd, at Virginia and Gay Nursing and Rehab in Vinton. In honor of Kenny's wishes, there will not be a wake or service. Inurnment will take place at a later date. Dawson Funeral Services of Maquoketa is caring for his family. Kenneth James was born June 12, 1924, in Otter Creek to John and Catherine Hazer Ehlinger. He graduated from St. Lawrence School in Otter Creek. On October 1, 1948, he was united in marriage to the love of his life, Dora Getkin, in Bremen, Germany. He was drafted in World War II, serving in the Finance Corps. He also was called back for the Korean War, serving 13 months in Korea as a finance officer, where he was awarded the Bronze Star. After returning, he worked for 3 years for Jackson State Savings Bank. Then he owned and operated Ehlinger Insurance in Maquoketa for 35 years. He is a member of Sacred Heart Church, the American Legion Post No. 75 of Maquoketa, and O'Connor Regenwerther VFW Post No. 3633. Kenny was a member of numerous boards in Maquoketa and a strong supporter of the community. Cards of condolences for the family may be directed to Dawson Funeral Services, attention Kenneth Ehlinger Family, P.O. Box 258, Wyoming, Iowa, 52362. Diane K. Bonjour. Diane K. Turner Bonjour, 68, of Dubuque, formerly of Keeler, Wisconsin, passed away Monday, November 22nd, at Enoble Manor Care Center in Dubuque. A celebration of Diane's life will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, November 27th, at the Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Diane was born on January 16, 1953, in Dubuque, the daughter of Richard A. and Kathleen L. Timmerman Turner. She was a graduate of Cuba City, Wisconsin High School, class of 1972. Diane was a CNA for over 22 years. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhed.com. Anthony S. Trevarthan, Galena. Anthony S. Trevarthan, 56, of Galena, died Tuesday, November 23rd. Arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena is assisting the family. Martha Ryder. Sister Martha Ryder, BVM, Bryant, 94, of Mount Carmel Bluffs, 1160 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, died Sunday, November 21st. Private funeral services will be Monday, November 29th. Virtual sharing of memories begins at 9:30 a.m., followed immediately by virtual visitation. Mass of Christian burial begins at 10:30 a.m. Services are private due to COVID-19 restrictions. All services may be viewed through live video stream, https://portal.stretchinternet.com/BVM Sisters/. Sister Martha ministered as chair and instructor in the physical science physics department at Clark University. She also taught at Mater Dei High School, Prince of Peace College Preparatory in Clinton, Iowa, and the Immaculata High School in Chicago. She was born May 25, 1927, in St. Louis, to Frederick and Myrtle Stockton Ryder. She entered the BVM congregation September 8, 1948, from St. Margaret of Scotland Parish, St. Louis. She professed first vows March 19, 1951, and final vows August 15, 1956. Memorials may be given to Sisters of Charity BVM Support Fund, 1100 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa, 52003. Hoffman, Schneider & Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. And we have some new arrivals with our passing. Sad as they often are for us, we must rejoice that we have new ones coming online ready to take their place. And we have just a couple today, both on Wednesday. Wednesday, November 24th, Bodine, Dusty and Paula Bodine of East Dubuque, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, and Willis, Brian, and Janelle Willis of Farley, a boy at Mercy One. Welcome to you two little ones, and may you find whatever it is that's out there. Now we continue with some more of our Dubuque area and tri-state area news with Platteville leaders approve budget, virus, workforce shortage spur tax increase. Responding to financial strain caused by the COVID-19 pandemic and ongoing workforce shortages, Platteville city leaders have approved a budget that will increase taxes, but not as significantly as they initially anticipated. Meanwhile, the city hopes to retain staff and maintain the capacity to attract new staff members, and it has crafted a $17.7 million budget that focuses on increasing staff pay across multiple employment categories. This budget is not requesting any additional staff. It is not requesting any type of big programs, said City Manager Adam Ruhlschuh. We are trying to invest in the employees that we have. The city's property tax rate will increase to $8.27 per $1,000 of assessed value, meaning an owner of a $150,000 home would pay about $1,240.50 in city property taxes annually, a $37.50 increase relative to 2021. Residents also will see sewer meter charges increase from $15.45 to $16.22 per month, and a volume rate increase from $4.75 per 100 cubic feet to $4.99. The additional revenue is being funneled into operational staffing costs along with supply and equipment contracts. The proposed budget includes an across-the-board 1% wage increase for non-union city staff at a cost of $19,903. Police officers will see a 4% wage increase, increasing expenses by $27,900. When we have been recruiting to bring in new officers, it certainly has been a struggle, Ruschel said. Wages for recreational seasonal workers will likewise increase, adding $10,500 in costs. The city also has increased the base rate of pay for multiple employees at a cost of $32,000. After 2 years of flat or declining cost, health insurance expenses increased $76,000. The city road salt contract likewise increased by $35,000. The budget also includes about $3.5 million in major infrastructure projects and equipment purchases, including the reconstruction of Cedar and Hickory Streets and Gridley Avenue at a cost of about $1.3 million. Although the city received about $1.2 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds, which will finance projects including sewer repairs, a stream bank stabilization project, and installation of a citywide camera system, it lost revenues due to the pandemic, including about $55,000 in interest income. Normally, the city collects about $125,000. Wisconsin imposes a tax levy limit, which is based upon net new construction that occurs within municipal boundaries. Construction enabled an $18,140 increase to the tax levy in the 2022 budget. In order to receive additional revenue, we as a city need to continue to grow, Ruschel said. Councilmember Kathy Kopp previously worried that she would be unable to convince property owners that increasing the tax rate for the purpose of retaining staff and purchasing salt was necessary. Weeks later, she said with additional research, she could better explain the city's position. It's industry-wide. Everybody is having to make some adjustments to keep their staff, Kopp said. Next, we have Asbury Council wants final draft of ordinance. Asbury City Council members this week expressed interest in seeing a draft of an ordinance that would require rental inspections and registrations. Council members discussed a potential rental inspection ordinance at their meeting this week. While council members did not vote on whether to implement such an ordinance, Mayor Jim Adams said they were interested in having city staff continue working on it. "We're not saying yes or no at this point," he said. "We would like to see a final draft." The city does not currently have an ordinance in place to outline maintenance standards at rental properties. Periodically, the city receives concerns from tenants about conditions of their rental units, said City Administrator Beth Bonds. "We don't have anything in our ordinances to enforce that, so based on some of that, we felt it was an endeavor we should probably move forward with." She said the potential ordinance would require landlords to register their rental units with the city and have a rental permit. It also would require units to be inspected to ensure they are in good condition, but it has not been determined who would perform those inspections. Bonds noted that city staff members are still researching the prospective ordinance, and council support regarding potentially having such an ordinance was sought before more work went into it. Adams added that city staff have looked into what other cities have in place regarding rental maintenance ordinances while thinking about what could be included in one for Asbury. "It's pretty similar to what you see in Dubuque or other cities," he said. "We're not trying to do anything too different." He noted that a final draft likely would not be presented to council members until early 2022, as city staff will be busy working on the city budget. Bonds added that an ordinance draft also would have to be vetted by a legal team before being brought before the public. Public information meetings also would be held in advance of council members taking action on the proposal. "It's still early in the process," Bonds said. "We're still looking at lots of minor details to get this to be in working order before going forward with it." Adams noted that an ordinance like this is part of ensuring Asbury residences' safety. "Renters are residents," Adams said. "As a city, we have an obligation for their safety, whether that's heat in the winter or police. If there are safety issues in rental properties, such as no smoke detectors or needing railings or something like that, there may be a need for us to help them." Our next tri-state piece has two pictures. One with a woman looks like putting some food on in styrofoam boxes, and it says Cindy King of Bernard and Mary Knupp of East Dubuque prepare Thanksgiving meals at the Other Side in East Dubuque on Thursday. The Other Side and the East Dubuque Lions Club teamed up to provide free meals to the community. And right next to it is another inset picture of a person sorting out some meals. And it says, Mike Meyer sorts Thanksgiving meals at the Other Side in East Dubuque on Thursday. And our article reads, East Dubuque volunteers serve up holiday cheer. Laughter, chatter, and friendly banter filled the air at the other side on Thursday morning, along with the tempting aroma of turkey, potatoes, and other Thanksgiving delicacies. More than 30 volunteers helped serve and deliver a free Thanksgiving meal hosted by the East Dubuque Bar and Restaurant in collaboration with the East Dubuque Lions Club. It's Thanksgiving, so we're here to help people, and it's the start of the Christmas spirit, said volunteer Mary Knupp of East Dubuque. There are so many people that need this, the elderly, those that have nowhere to go. The meal was available to all area residents, regardless of income status, and meals were available for pickup or delivery. Organizers launched the event last year when several community meals, including the Dubuque Community Thanksgiving Dinner and a meal at Lulu's Seldom Seen in East Dubuque, were not held due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Mike Meyer, owner of The Other Side, said 544 meals were distributed last year. This year, organizers planned for about 600, including 400 scheduled deliveries. It's a cool thing and fun to be part of, he said. You see the happiness and the smiles on the faces of the people who are coming in and out or when you drop off food. Volunteers and staff from The Other Side cooked a total of 28 turkeys for the event, along with other Thanksgiving staples. Knupp and a friend had spent the previous 3 days baking 58 pies, ranging from cherry to strawberry to pumpkin to chocolate silk. Today, she formed part of the double-sided assembly line set up at two folding tables in front of The Other Side's bar. Dubuque resident Christy Keys handed styrofoam containers to Knupp and Cindy King of Bernard, who filled them with moist slices of turkey. As the containers made their way down the line, volunteers added mashed potatoes, stuffing, and corn, then ladled gravy onto the hot food. While scooping mashed potatoes, King's daughter, Faith Blakeman, 19, said she was happy to spend her Thanksgiving serving the community. "It's good to help others that need it," she said. At the end of the line, Diane Sullivan sealed, stacked, and bagged the containers, ready for delivery drivers to distribute to hungry recipients. Sullivan, who lives near Madison, Wisconsin, is Meyer's aunt. "My family is all here," she said, gesturing around the packed restaurant. Near the door, Meyer consulted a list and called out the names of those who had signed up to receive a meal. Volunteer delivery drivers grabbed bags of hot food from Sullivan, along with separate bags containing cold items like dinner rolls, cranberries, and dessert. "We want to take it to the people who, maybe for COVID reasons, are staying home as well," Meyer said. "If people don't want to get together for fear of COVID, we'll just bring the meal to you." It's a cool thing and fun to be a part of. You see the happiness and the smiles on the faces of the people who are coming in and out or when you drop off food. Mike Meyer, owner of The Other Side. Now we have our news in brief. Dubuque man sentenced to 5 days in jail, 2 years probation for two assaults. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 5 days in jail and 2 years of informal probation for his involvement in two unrelated assaults. Kiefer L. Helbing, 26, of Dubuque, was given the sentence earlier this month in the Iowa District Court of Dubuque. After pleading guilty to charges of assault causing bodily injury and assault causing injury, Helbing also will receive credit for time already served to go toward his 5-day jail sentence. As part of his sentence, Helbing must comply with no contact orders issued for both Nicholas R. Rogers, 24, of Dubuque, and Mohammed A. Alufi, 23, of Dubuque. Court documents state that Helbing assaulted Rogers on August 14, 2020. Rogers had been golfing with Helbing that day and was sleeping at Helbing's residence when two friends woke him up. Helbing also was woken up, which made him upset, documents said. Helbing then punched Rogers in the face, causing him to fall onto the floor and start bleeding. Rogers was treated for his injuries at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. The second assault occurred December 19th when Helbing punched Alufi at the Doghouse Lounge, 1646 Asbury Road. Alufi required surgery for his broken jaw following the incident and was treated for abrasions to his left cheek and left elbow at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Dubuque Foundation to hold annual Data Walk event December 2nd. The Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque holds its fourth annual Data Walk event next week. The event will be held in person from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, December 2nd at the Foundation offices, 700 Locust, according to a press release. Data on the theme of employment and equity will be displayed, including indicators of the pandemic's impact on workforce availability and average wages compared to Dubuque's cost of living. Data presented at the event is intended to generate discussion and collaboration to find local solutions to issues, according to the release. Now we have our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do this weekend. Unwrap the Magic of Christmas Saturday, various locations in Bellevue from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Craft shows, Fireman's Chili Supper, open house at participating businesses, fireworks and lighted parade. Cost is free admission. Get more information from the Bellevue business area. Christmas in Cassville, Saturday, downtown Cassville, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Craft fair, food and beverage, visits with Santa, wine walk from 2 to 6 p.m., crafts with Mrs. Claus, Christmas movies, reindeer petting zoo, wagon rides, live nativity scene, and lighted parade. The evening will conclude with winter fireworks and tree lighting at Riverside Park. Free admission. The wine walk tickets are $25. More information, www.cassville.org. Well, you have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, and I've been racing my way through all of our news as I do on Fridays. This has been the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for the 26th of November. I wish you the very best weekend ahead. Not too bad out there for late November. But take care and keep a smile on your face as much as you can. Until next week, so long.